It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Our first guest here in the studio with us, Dr. Dennis Damon. It's an Ask a Veterinarian Day. And we were just remarking on, my goodness, what a gorgeous day it is out there, huh?
Wow. Tremendous.
This is just about perfect.
Autumn weather.
Yes. Yeah, well, it'll be autumn in, 3 days?
Three days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could take it like this every day of the year. maybe it'll snow
on
Christmas
Eve. We aren't
that
fortunate, though.
No, we aren't. Folks, later on the program today, we're going to be talking about the new senior woman. And if you fall into that category, or maybe you will, I guess most of us, most of you women will someday, or maybe there's someone in your family who might qualify. The new senior woman, it's fascinating information. Barbara Fleischer will be chatting with us a little bit later on the program today. But first, the aforementioned Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian. His practice is at Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler, about 5 miles south of Butler. And it's right at Thorncrest, right?
Yep.
Thorncrest Drive. And it's Ask the Veterinarian today. So our phone lines will be open here at 283-2525 if you have questions or concerns about your pet. 283-2525, 283-2525. I've seen a couple of stories on the wire within the past couple of weeks about rabies cases. Have you in your practice, Dr. Damon, noticed any uptick in the number of rabies cases?
Not at our practice, but it's starting to move around in the United States, and especially right now with the conditions down south.
Oh, yes.
And that makes it a little bit more conducive to that disease and other diseases with animals and things. So we just have to be on the outlook of it. And CDC, Bureau, and everybody that's involved with diseases of animals and things are noting that throughout the country. The other thing that is sort of going on in our area is this wasting disease in deer, where some of these deer are now starting to come out on the roads, and they look like they have some sort of neurological problem. They're mm-hmm. very dehydrated. They don't respond to sounds, beeping of horns and things, and you just have to be kind of careful when you see a deer walking on the road. And if you beep and you're going reasonably fast, you want to kind of slow down, because they're not going to respond like a normal deer would be and to scat and things like that. So
chronic wasting disease, mm-hmm. I think they call it, and it affects the deer's brain. Is that
right?
Is this similar to, in any way, mad cow disease, which they were talking about a few years ago?
Yeah, it's somewhat similar to it.
Obviously, it's a different animal.
Yeah, and it's because they kind of get with our cattle and things, and to get a worm particular that causes them to go downhill, and it's also does involve a virus too to get it, but we're starting to see a lot. Matter of fact, yesterday I was out in the countryside and saw two deer, which we had to call the police on, and mm-hmm. and they definitely had the disease itself. So,
you know, I saw a deer along the highway a week or so ago. That now that you mentioned it to me, it looked very much in distress. So obviously, mm-hmm. it had been struck by a vehicle, but mm-hmm. it just didn't look good. The fur looked
scraggly.
Yes, and exactly. Yeah,
Sort of like mangy, puffs of hair. Yeah. And things.
Well, this has been spreading, hasn't it? Wasn't it earlier in the eastern part of the state, and now it's spreading into the western part?
Right, right.
I'm going to have to make a note to get one of the wildlife conservation officers on the program from the Game Commission to talk about that, especially before we get into deer season.
Right.
I understand, I have no expertise, but I understand that it does not spread to humans, but something we want to talk about.
Well, when these people are out hunting, and I'm sure that the hunters know and are aware fully of what wasting disease is, but they want to absolutely be sure that, their deer is edible, and also the fact that there's nothing in it that can cause any harm to humans, too, so...
It's another story that I saw. By the way, folks, our phone number is 283-2525. Any questions you have concerning your pet, any concerns about pet behavior, obviously symptoms of if you think your pet is ill, or pet nutrition, pet behavior, any of those sorts of questions or concerns, we'd be happy to take a crack at them here. Ask the veterinarian, 283-2525, if you'd like to talk with Dr. Damon, 283-2525. I saw a story on the wire about puppies that had been sold by pet stores. There's none around here, this particular pet store. I think there's one in Pittsburgh. But the puppies, I hope I can pronounce this. I never heard of this infection before. Campylobacter.
Campylobacter, yeah.
Okay, you know what it is. But apparently there were some people, some humans, who contracted this infection from puppies that they had bought at a pet store. And I saw a later story that said, well, this particular infection is actually rather common among puppies. It's not very often spread to people. I don't know. I didn't even know whether you'd know anything about it or not.
Yes. Actually, there's very few diseases that can pass from dog and cat to people. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of hygiene. And strictly hygiene. When we get puppies and things, we want to be sure to clean our hands after handling puppies, and especially when we're eating and things, because that's the way most diseases are transferred, is through hygiene itself. And we really don't take the time to do a reasonable cleaning of our hands and things between pets and things. I've seen people handle pets and things some of the like Dairy Queens and things like that,
or
and
a picnic maybe.
Really, they should use the topical things that are available. Sometimes you're not near water and soap. But you do have now the Purees and things that can serve as sanitizers and things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hand sanitizers. And I've asked you this question before, but since we're talking about it, I have to ask you again. You're not a big fan of having puppies and dogs lick people.
Nope.
Lick people in the face,
are
you?
Especially children.
I mean, we see this a lot, Dr. Damon. You know it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It their mouths go places that actually humans don't, and they can carry eggs and things from dog to dog, and those eggs can get in our system, and they can cause visceral larva migraines in people. They've even diagnosed worms within the cornea of the eyes of children that migrate. They've even gone so far as to find these worms within the brain tissue that has caused seizures and things. So it's again boils down to the way diseases are transferred is hygiene.
I even saw a TV commercial a month or so ago, and it was a big friendly dog commercial. I don't know what it was for. I don't think it was dog food, but it was something. And the dog jumps up on the couch and is just licking this guy all over his face, and he was, you know, loving the dog. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. Maybe not such a good idea there, Jack.
Yeah. Sometimes these television programs and advertisements do promote things that they're not really promoting, but people see it and they say, well, that's okay. I guess we licking's fine. I've seen it in a great number, not so much animals, but other advertisements where you kind of wonder what they really are advertising when they're actually false advertising something else in the advertisement itself.
Yeah.
And promoting it because humans are viewing it.
So pretty rare, you say. I mean, it happens, but there's not a whole lot of diseases that can be transferred dog or cat to person.
Yeah. We approach animals in the wild that behavior-wise, if they aren't behaving right and are coming up to us sluggishly and they don't look right and things, again, I mean, your approach is hygiene. Keep yourself clean, far enough away from the animal, and get somebody in that's a little bit more knowledgeable about the animal, and that way you stay kind of clear of some of these diseases.
And, of course, if your dog is out, even if it's out taking care of business, they can many times come in contact with the
absolutely. They can wander off to your property and urinate, defecate, salivate on your property, and then your animal goes out and sniffs and eats grass in the area where a raccoon last night could have been frothing and there, and then collects or contaminates itself with rabies, and then you wonder, where did he pick this up?
Yeah, and that's all you need. By the way, I saw a fox. It's pretty rare to see a fox these days. They must be very secretive animals. I actually saw a mother fox and two cubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's rare.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah. They came out of a kind of a little wooded thicket next to one of the holes on the golf course where I was playing.
The fox are low in numbers when rabbits are high. And it kind of reverses itself when foxes are high. There's a large predatory push to get rid of all the rabbits. Mm. Then the foxes become low and the rabbits build back up and their supply builds up. So it kind of goes with the supply and demand issue even in the animal kingdom.
I mention it only because foxes can carry rabies, right?
Absolutely.
Foxes and raccoons and skunks,
absolutely.
I think.
And then, you know, that fox could have walked out on the course and somebody said, oh, that's a cute little guy over there, and went up and maybe tried to pet it and things, and it stood still, and then it bit him. Now you've got an exposure going on.
Yeah. Well, I very seldom see them. This was a red fox. I guess there are silver ones, too. I don't know that I've ever actually seen a live silver fox. But they, first of all, I'm not sure how many of them there are. And secondly, they seem to be, well, they're a nocturnal animal, right? So, they do most of their
hunting at night.
Consider
yourself lucky to see them, because very few people get to see foxes and even bear, although how prevalent they are, you still don't see them a lot.
I have seen bear around and fox. I don't want to go too close to either one of those, to be honest with you.
No.
I'm happy to take a look at them.
From a distance.
You know a fox right away. I mean, they're not really big. They're about the size of a large dog, but they've got a tail that's the size of the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Got a big,
bushy
tail. Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Dennis Damon here from Suburban Animal Clinic. It's Ask the Veterinarian. You have questions, comments, feel free to join us, 283-25 1-800-283-2525. I heard that September is Healthy Cat Month. In fact, I saw a story in the paper about that, Healthy Cat Month. And it talked about some of the things that you might watch for if you think your cat might have some sort of problems. One of them was doing its business in inappropriate places other than the litter box. Now, that's not necessarily a sign of problems, but it very often is, right?
Could be. Sometimes they can be urinating in the house somewhere, and occasionally urinating in the box, and that could indicate a cystitis or some sort of bladder problem with your cat. Sometimes they'll start to defecate in the household. And if that starts to occur, generally defecation patterns and things follow behavioral disruption in your pet, either dog or cat. And so you want to kind of get on top of the situation as soon as you can so that you can nip it in the bud before time sequence goes by to a point where it's going to really entail quite a lot of time, money, and sometimes drugs and training to try to get your pet back to way it was.
Also, this story said don't be concerned about just where the cat is urinating, but keep an eye on how much. Decreasing urination could mean hydration problems. I guess cats don't tend to drink a whole lot,
no.
Do they?
No.
Like dog, you see a dog go up to a water dish, and sometimes it's just like they're having their last meal, you know? Mm-hmm. They're just drinking it down as fast as they can. Cats don't do that.
Nope. And it's because of the environment they come from. One, that sets them up for this condition because their bodies sort of get regulated because of the environment versus dogs. Are found sort of worldwide, whereas cats are generally found desert situations. Mm-hmm. And so they're already sort of got a time span type, mechanism that is timed to sort of drought. And they can conserve their water in their body, but it also puts them in jeopardy because they actually start killing kidney cells. Even the ones in the wild do this as they go through sort of their dehydration phases. And some cats will go sometimes 5 to 7 days in the wild without water before they get rain. Wow. And drink. So their bodies are sort of geared for this. And in human side, we domesticated them, but they did not lose that. And so consequently, you have to kind of make available water so that some cats don't like to drink from plastics. Bowls. They prefer metal bowls. Sometimes some cats prefer to drink from running water, such as your spigots in your bathroom, drip, mm-hmm. Type situation. And there's only specific faucets that they kind of sort of pick and things. And my contention is when people get cats, I always kind of say to them, that the first purchase that they should do is go to Lowe's or Home Depot and at least buy two circulating water things that they can put in their house.
Like those cheap little fountains or something. They're not very expensive.
No. Yeah. $29 buys a really nice setup, and you do have to clean it every week and things. Mm-hmm. But a good place where cats can go and drink plenty of water, and most cats like that type of situation. Mm.
And it should be water, not milk, right?
Right.
I wonder where that ever came from. I can remember when I was a little kid, you know, the books that would have, you know, giving the kitty a bowl of milk. It was like, farm cats, or, you know, leave a saucer of milk out on the back porch. That's actually not good for cats?
Well, it can give them diarrhea, and generally they get milk when they're sick.
Oh.
Everybody gives milk to a cat when they are sort of got respiratory disease or their gastrointestinal tract is upset, and it just promotes diarrhea.
Makes
because
it worse,
of the lactose that's in there. And so theoretically, probably I would say 50% of the cats could substantiate themselves with milk, but it's when it's given, and that's the reason why we kind of say no milk, because people think that it's okay to give, and that's something that cats will be attracted to, mm-hmm. but it makes them worse.
That's funny, because I don't have cats now, but when I was a kid, our siblings had a couple of sisters. Everybody had cats. That's all they gave them, milk, mm-hmm. milk and cat food. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever had a bowl of water out with cats. Always a saucer of milk, you know.
Yep.
Things we learn, huh?
Yep.
Now, another thing that it mentioned, by the way, folks, phone number 283-2525, if you've been feeding your cat milk all these times. 283-2525. If your cat ceases to groom herself or himself, that can be a real danger sign.
Mm-hmm. Grooming is sort of a 24-hour round-the-clock thing for cats, and it's about a 12-hour round thing for dogs. Dogs don't spend much time, but when they do lay down and things, they do try to clean themselves and things. But in the cat world, that's a must, and they sort of groom themselves. And if a cat doesn't groom himself, it doesn't necessarily say that they're sick, but you got to start to watch where these cats are unthrifty. Their hair coats are really dry and got a lot of hair tufts and things, because fat cats generally end up that way. They're lazy, and they don't groom themselves quite as easily as a healthy cat.
Well, when you think about it, it's probably if they're overweight, it's a little difficult to, because they groom themselves with their tongue, right?
Right.
A little difficult to get to some of those places.
Right, and then they're also lazy, mm-hmm. just like human beings that are kind of overweight. We don't tend to be as active as a person that's thin, and so consequently we either don't shower often enough and things, and it shows in our appearance.
While we're speaking about overweight cats, that is a major problem here in the United States. People overfeeding, all pets,
and humans,
and yes, humans too, we're included on that list. But sometimes you'll see a cat, and anymore you can almost tell a feral cat if you can see them, because they're usually thin and mm-hmm. wiry,
mm-hmm.
and a domesticated, overfed cat
mm-hmm.
is just kind of waddles along, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we tend to spoil them, which there's nothing wrong in spoiling them, but I think we overspoil them, and theoretically... that's sort of a no-no, because we set them up for other conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, liver problems, liver fatty filtration of the liver. To just specifically mention a few, a few that are very, very common that we see in veterinary medicine in cats. And it's all caused by starting to overfeed our cats and give them everything, let them free choice their food. They don't have a switch on them that says that they're full. They'll eat all day long, all night long, and that's not healthy for your kitty, because eventually he's going to end up with a thyroid problem or a kidney problem.
So what's the solution? You only put a specific amount of food in
just
the dish,
like you feed and your dogs. Feed them twice a day. Set a normal ratio amount available so that they have food. I don't know where we sort of got in the groove that cats can have a full bowl of food, and yet we feed our dogs twice a day, routinely. The general population of dogs get fed twice a day. But in cats, we just dump the food in a bowl and let them eat. And I don't know exactly. I think it started back when we were feeding a number of cats out in the wild, barn cats and things, and we just filled up the dishes and let them eat on their own. And it's a different situation when you house a cat and where you are taking care of a cat outside your house. Those are two different conditions, and you will find that even though that you're feeding a bowl of food out in the wild and things, they're also picking up other nutrition and things through wild animals and things, and they keep themselves healthy there versus in a hospital or a house situation. There's no access to the mice, and there's no access to berries and things that they do eat that try to keep themselves healthy.
Yeah, the farm cats. I can remember when I was a kid visiting relatives who had a farm. They kept several all over the place because there were grain stores and in the barn. I saw a story in the Post Gazette. I think it was just this past Sunday. You know, there's a lot of craft breweries springing up all over the place, and they have what they call brewery cats now. One or two that they like to keep in the brewery because, well, they've got stores of hops and grains and so on, which draw rodents. And there's no better way to keep your rodents under control than to have a cat or two.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they become a working animal. And when you require work of an animal, it's a different process than just feeding an animal.
Why do cats, so many of them, I don't know whether all of them do it or not, when they do run down a mouse or a field mouse or a bird, why do they bring it to your front door?
They're proud of it, just like people are proud of a buck that they killed. They got 10 horn or 10 spikes to it and everything, and you'll see nonchalantly they take the long route home and the deer's in a proper place that displays the number of spikes and things that he's putting it on display for the public. Well, the animal's no different. He's sort of keyed into you as his caretaker and things, and he wants to kind of show you, hey, look what I caught here today, and then it'll disappear.
They'll even bring him in the cat door once in a while, too. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of like a second grader bringing home their latest art project for for approval from mom and dad. Good job.
Yeah, yep. We're looking for that.
Way to go. We'll put this up on the refrigerator. 283-2525, our number. Ask the veterinarian today. With us here in the studio is Dr. Dennis Damon. His practice is at Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South of Butler. It's about 5 miles fact, almost exactly 5 miles south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive, Suburban Animal Clinic. Our phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. Any noticeable increase in Lyme disease over the summer in your practice?
It's even stronger now than what it was last year.
Wow.
If I had 16 dogs to check today, I would kind of stick my neck out and say that at least 9 of those are going to be positive for Lyme's, at least 50% or greater.
Wow.
It doesn't say that they have the disease. What it says is that they have the disease aboard their body. Somewhere down the road, they're going to come down with Lyme disease, and the opportunity avails us to treat that disease in its quiescent state, and it's cheaper to treat it in that state than it is to wait until they show it, because then it requires a different protocol in treatment.
Isn't it amazing that that there's such a high percentage of dogs these days with the Lyme disease? I mean, because there's a very effective vaccine, isn't there? For people, unfortunately.
Yep. But we're not vaccinating every animal. I would venture to say at my practice, even though that I mention it to everybody that comes in, I'm only vaccinating one-third of the animals. Mm. People don't really go for something that they can't see. They don't really, I mean, yes, they've heard of it, but they haven't really experienced it or gone through it. It's common now to, get your rabies vaccination, but it always marvels me when there's a rabies scare that all of a sudden you post or hold two rabies clinics and you're vaccinating over 200-300 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And where did they come from?
Yeah.
You know, so people do get animals and they just don't follow the health protocols and vaccinate and things today. They kind of leisurely lay back and not be so concerned about it.
But dogs can very, very easily be exposed to the tick that causes Lyme disease. I mean, just
more commonly than a human.
Absolutely, because they're going out into the yard 2 or 3 times a day.
And most of the time, people don't think, they think that they're safe in the house, but they do have to go outside and urinate and defecate and things. And even though you don't see ticks, ticks are out there. The ticks exist in 3 forms. There's the adult, the larva, the nymph, and the pupae, and they go through those stages. And the nymph and the larva are actually, if you take and look at when you're reading a book or reading a newspaper, the period or the dot at the end of the sentence is exactly the size of those two particular ticks.
You'd never see those with a naked eye, would you?
Not on a white dog or any pet. And they can bite your pet to get their blood supply, and then that entails, if they were positive for Lyme's, they've given your dog Lyme's, and they're ready to go to their next stage.
And they're just hanging around on
trees,
fronds
and
of grass,
grasses and
bushes.
Bushes and whatever to try to get a, because they have little feelers on their legs, and they are heat seeking, and they try to get in an area where there's at least some exposure to mammals, but out of that's the reason why ticks breed in high numbers. One tick in its lifetime can give rise to 50,000 eggs.
Oh, my gosh.
But out of that 50,000 eggs, only 20 to 30 will probably ever complete the venue,
mm-hmm.
Simply because they didn't get into a right area to go through their whole cycle. So that's a high number, and you start, you know, producing at the lower level, 100 ticks can produce over 5 million protégé, and out of that 5 million protégé, only have 5,000 able to go on, but yet 5,000 is a high number.
Is Lyme disease, it can be fatal for dogs, right?
Absolutely. Most of the time you just see lameness, sometimes anemias, intestinal problems, sometimes neurological problems, but the one area that if the Lyme's attacks, which is the kidney, if it attacks the kidney, we are not very successful in treating those. It actually will kill the kidney cells eventually and wipe out the kidney. So theoretically, you really have to go through a kidney transplant or something to try to save whatever individual has Lyme's disease itself. In people, we're luckily bypassed the kidney stage, but it is something that is mysterious. There's a lot of MDs out there that don't recognize that Lyme's even exists because the number of people that come into my practice, and I said, well, you know, you should discuss this with your doctor and see what's available and things. And he said, well, we did, and he says don't even be concerned about it. Mm-hmm. Then I'm kind of then saying, well, if the medical profession is concerned about it, then why are we struggling with it?
You can treat, I'm obviously not a medical man, but what I've read is in humans, somebody with Lyme disease, you can treat with a series of antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
Very effective, I guess, mm-hmm. almost 100%. How do you treat, or can
same,
you treat
same.
A dog?
Same thing?
Same way. Antibiotics?
Same way. We use the same antibiotic. It's called doxycycline. When it's not available, there's another drug that steps into the picture, but doxycycline is the main antibiotic that will kill Lyme's. If you did see a tick on you, just say that you detected it on your waist and it wasn't there yesterday, that's a good chance that you may not have Lyme's yet. Even if that tick had Lyme's,
mm-hmm.
it takes about 72 hours to get into your system. So theoretically, even if he's just got on you and he impregnated and he's been there for 12 hours, you probably aren't positive for Lyme's. You probably could be tested. You are negative. But the thing is,
you want to get it off of you, first of all. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You would put yourself on about 5 to 7 days of this doxycycline. And again, I'm not a human doctor to be prescribing things.
Mm-hmm.
But you can treat humans for a short period of time knowing that either they're negative for Lyme's, and it's only been on there a very short period of time.
Can you get it again?
After you've already had? Yep. That's the thing of animals is once they get it and we treat it and we sort of get them out of trouble and things, the people have to then provide sort of treatment on a consistent basis, mm-hmm. for animals.
Because in some human diseases, you know, once you've had it, and you become immune. You say, well, I've already had the 16-day measles or whatever.
This is one that isn't immunity-based.
Let's take a call. It's Ask the Veterinarian. Phone number is 283-2525. Dr. Dennis Damon is here in the studio. Hi, caller. Go right ahead. It's your turn with Dr. Damon.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dr. Damon.
Hi.
I have a question about ticks and Lyme disease.
Uh-huh.
About once a week, I exercise my dog out at Preston Park, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a bad area.
Yeah, it is.
And very bad.
My dog has been vaccinated for Lyme disease, but for the first time, I found a tick on him yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know the proper procedure for taking the tick off. And should I be concerned about Lyme disease, even though he's been vaccinated? Can I cover that?
Do you have him on a preventative? Or are you just depending on the vaccine?
I do not.
Okay, well, you should put him on a preventative.
You mean like a topical? Even?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would highly suggest something that doesn't interfere with your lifestyle is the Seresta flea and tick collar that provides you with 8 months of continuous protection on your pet.
What was that name again? I'm sorry. I didn't
it's called Seresta.
Seresta, okay.
Your veterinarian has it. That would provide you with 8 months of treatment. And you're doing nothing except you do have to replace it in 8 months from now to keep it ongoing.
Mm-hmm. You have to get a new shot every year.
You do have to vaccinate your dog on an annual basis. You should try to keep that within a month of expiring to keep it updated so that your dog is immune-based as high as it is necessary to avoid the Lyme's disease.
Did you find the tick pretty easily, sir, or was it kind of an accident that you spotted?
Well, it was just an accident, actually.
Was it swollen?
It apparently had been on him long enough that it was swelled up to about the size of a pencil point.
Okay. So it's not been there very long, I can tell you that, unless it was a male. And males don't swell, but females do. But what I would do is wait 30 days. If your dog hasn't been checked within the last 3 years, or 2 years, I would get him rechecked again 30 days from the last tick known exposure. And if it's negative, the vaccine is doing its job, and also incorporate that collar in so that you've got two protections, internal, external.
That sounds great.
Good
advice. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I've heard that Preston Park's a beautiful place, but I have heard that there are a lot of ticks out there.
Yeah, was the area I experimented with the Seresta collar, because what I did was, at that time I had five dogs in my family, so I put the two Seresta flea collars on my daughter's dogs, and I took the collars off of my dogs, and that weekend, which was 3 days later, we took them into to Preston Park,
mm-hmm.
and they were only in there for 30 minutes, and the Great Dane had 60 ticks on it.
My gosh!
The my little bulldog had, I think we picked off something like 32, the other dog that was in the test, we picked off probably 10 or 12.
And the dogs with these Seresta collars were fairly clean?
They had zero.
Zero? Wow.
Couldn't find a tick on one place.
Hmm.
So it kind of told me that collar works very well as long as your dog doesn't have any reactions, like skin reactions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If it gets a little sluggish or sleepy, I would tend to say I would put up with the sluggishness and the sleepiness for the protection that it affords for the lion's protection.
Yeah. Let's take a break here. There's a couple of other things I want to talk about with the good doctor. Our phone lines remain open as well, 283-2525. Ask the veterinarian, 283-2525. I want to talk about, and I know that these are not domesticated animals, but it's been in the news with the deaths of a couple of animals at the Pittsburgh Zoo, including a little baby elephant that everybody was in love with. So I want to talk about that a little bit. So we will when we come back. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. Coming up later on the program today, Barbara Fleischer joins us to talk about the new senior woman. If you fall into that category, or someone in your family does, or maybe you will at some point in the near future, the statistics about the number of people in the United States, the number of boomers who turn 65 every day, it's staggering. It's like thousands every day. Anyway, that's later on the program today. A quick break and back with more with Dr. Dennis Damon here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Just a quick note before I talk a little bit about the animals. We just heard, was it yesterday, we had Dan Tobin on from the Red Cross. There's still a great need for people who are victims of the hurricanes down south. And Dr. Damon, I think there are some people collecting at your office, right?
Yes, I have several clients that are headed down that way at the end of September and October, actually to both areas, and they bring by blankets, food. They do contribute monetary. That's probably part of the most expensive aspect, because now that they've gotten the blankets and the food, they didn't really kind of figure out how to, they figured, you know, a little bit, car, van, but this one gentleman has enough to fill a semi, and to trying to get the cost of the semi to take it down there and things, he's struggling with the need for money and things, so he has a GoFundMe page going on, and also, but anything and everything that could help out these victims, we're sort of collecting and trying to help transfer them to the individuals that are going down to help.
Dr. Damon's practice, his office is at Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South, right at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's 5 miles south of Butler, Suburban Animal Clinic. I'm sure all of our listeners can imagine anyone who didn't see the pictures actually probably follow the incredible care that the officials at the Pittsburgh Zoo took to try to save that baby elephant who was euthanized about a week and a half ago, I think. I don't remember the exact timeline. But a few things to talk about. Number one, this baby elephant was born. They have like a preserve, an elephant preserve out near Somerset somewhere where they, I don't know how many there are there, but it's like a breeding area and free range and so on and so forth. This is where that baby elephant was born, and the mother elephant rejected it.
Right.
It was premature, and the mother elephant rejected it and wouldn't let it nurse. And that was my first big question. And of all the news stories that I watched, nobody examined that. I found that extremely strange. Isn't the maternal instinct incredibly strong in most animals?
Especially in elephants, yeah. Because they're drawn to their young
Could the mother have somehow sensed that the baby was premature and maybe wouldn't survive?
That's possibly one of the things that we as human beings try to intervene on any situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes these animals have figured it out before we even know anything about it. And even when you kind of watch these safari things that you can go on, and they kind of always comment, you know, why don't we save the animal from being slaughtered by other animals, and especially the babies are taken, even though that they're healthy from things, but that's Mother Nature.
The way of the wild.
The way of the wild. And sometimes when we intervene and we win the battle in probably a good 75-80% of the time, but we lose the battle in 20% of the time, and we get really bad publicity.
Yeah, this happened to be a very visible thing, yeah. Another call, 283-2525, Ask the Veterinarian. Caller, thanks for waiting. Go right ahead. It's your turn with Dr. Damon.
Yes, I have a question on the Seresto collars. I use Advantix on my dog.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Seresto or the Advantix? Now, I do it every month. I'm regular about that. I do not forget. Is one better than the other?
No.
Okay.
Bayer makes both. And they made a collar that is sort of independent of Advantix, simply because there was a demand for it. And both are excellent products. If you have one that's working, I do not recommend that you switch to the other.
Okay.
Do always use the workable product that you have, as opposed to a newer product, unless the newer product offers you several other things that your present product does not offer.
And you've had great success, caller, with the Advantix.
Yes, I do. In fact, when I got my one dog, I did start her out on a Seresto collar, and she does have the Lyme's vaccine, but she just would scratch and scratch and scratch at her neck. And I even have that same problem if I go to put Advantix on her. She just like goes nuts. She rolls, she scratches. And so I do like a light dose on her, but I also mix up like essential oils that are supposed to repel the fleas and ticks, and I missed her with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have an opinion on the natural essential oils or not, but I don't know if her skin's so sensitive, but she just totally goes nuts when I...
Some dogs do. That's the reason why I said if you... some of the reactions that are with these collars or ointments... will cause a dog to scratch, develop somewhat of a dry skin phenomenon. And if he does, then I suggest that we kind of search and go for something that's going to be a workable situation, because there's definitely some dogs that you either use the collars or the ointments in that do have peculiar reactions, but they're in the 1-3% category. They're not in the 95-98% category.
The other factor, the doctor mentioned this to a previous caller, Yeah, probably some discomfort for your dog, but hey, you're protecting the dog from Lyme's disease, so
that's what I kind of thought. I mean, I put it on her, but she's not happy in the scratching, and but eventually she stops that. Like the next day, it's kind of like that part's all gone.
Lesser of the two evils, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Sure. Good questions. 283-2525, the number 283-2525. Back to the baby elephant. I saw there were protesters outside the Pittsburgh Zoo this past weekend, not specifically because of this baby elephant that died, but they were apparently, from what I gathered, were protesting the fact that they had elephants at all.
Mm-hmm.
Their signs seemed to indicate, don't have elephants in captivity. From what I've seen of the new modern zoos, not the old zoos, I can remember when I was a little kid and went to the Pittsburgh Zoo.
Absolutely,
all the animals were in cages.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, none of them are. They have natural habitat. I mean, obviously, they're not on the African savannah, but pretty darn close.
Right.
And from some of the reports we see about animals in the wild, elephants especially, man, they're being slaughtered all over the place.
Absolutely. I mean, put them back in their environmental situation. Sometimes that's crueler than keeping them in our situation where they're viewed and things, simply because there are certain practices in certain religions, and also the medical market in Asia and things that use rhino horns,
ground up rhino horn,
rhino and tusks of elephants. They use those, and really, the medicine is maybe a workable situation, but we're destroying an animal that is in few numbers.
There was also a story from the Pittsburgh Zoo, and it's just recent, which is why I mentioned it. They one of their tigers died, and this was just within the past week or so. Turns out, they did an autopsy, and this animal had been in danger of death for years. Had some sort of an abdominal hernia or
mm-hmm.
something like that,
mm-hmm.
and just all of a sudden died. And obviously people can get attached to these animals, but everything has a lifespan.
Absolutely, and sometimes the public voices an opinion before they get all the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I, knowing as a veterinarian, have run into some pets that have conditions going on in them, and I'm trying to diagnose one thing, and here, lo and behold, there's a hernia that sealed itself. The body took care of itself, but his intestines are in the chest cavity itself, which
in the wrong place.
But over time, the animal, due to compensation mechanisms and things, has adjusted to it. And as long as he's not stressed and things, the animal does fine. Just as soon as he's stressed and things, it jeopardizes the heart and things, and you start mm-hmm. to see these things. And how these animals live with these things for years and things, it's really phenomenal. And I think God bless them with some sort of trait that makes them seal themselves, heal themselves, so that they can go on and live somewhat of a healthy life and not depend on man.
In terms of the baby elephant, from what I read, I followed the story fairly closely, and the zoo officials did everything. Obviously, the baby elephant would have died within a day or two because the mother rejected.
Well, they have to follow protocol, and they're underneath the eyes of several organizations that keep really tabs on them. So you just don't put an animal in a zoo and that's it, and they're not followed.
Mm-hmm.
They undergo a scrutiny, and they become part of a book, and there's certain protocol that have to be followed on each and every animal that's in that zoo.
maybe in the olden days and in some of these, kind of rundown traveling circuses that are still in other countries, I understand, mm-hmm. especially South mm-hmm. America, animals were horribly mistreated. But, most modern zoos today,
nope.
I don't think so. And nope. in some cases, like some of these rare tigers, they may save the species, for
right.
all we know.
Absolutely.
Dr. Dennis Damon, again, his practice, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive, if you're interested in helping the hurricane collection. I'll be doing that for a little while yet, I guess, right down there.
Yes.
Yeah. And thanks for being with us. Good to see you today.
Thank you.
It's always
Thank you
informative.
For listening.
I always learn a lot. More to come on It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll take a break, and then we'll be chatting with the Barbara Fleischer about the new senior woman. Are you a senior woman? Do you know one? Is there one in your family? You might be interested. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. They're a local company, South Monroe Street here in Butler. They've been around for, 77 years now. They've been taking people from our area to places near and far. And I do mean near and far. Somebody asked me the other day, are they going to have a, because for many years they've had trips to New York City at Christmas time for shopping. And the answer is yes, they are. In fact, there's one here coming up December 2nd. And I realize that seems like a long ways off for some folks, but hey, we're almost to October. One day shopping in New York City. How do they ever do that? Well, you leave on a Friday night, about 10:30, and you travel on one of their modern coaches to New York all night. And you sleep on the coach easily. Get up, go shopping all day or sightseeing or whatever you want to do in the Big Apple. Back on the coach at 10 o'clock Saturday night and back home. It's pretty neat. Yeah. Get the details on that online at their website, butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. They have other holiday trips coming up down to Ogle Bay to see the Festival of Lights down there. Light Up Night in Pittsburgh on the Gateway Clipper. Boy, I've never seen that from the water. That would be nice. And lots of other holiday treats, too, all over the place. And coming up in early January, one-day trip to the annual Pennsylvania Farm Show, January 7th. So lots of trips, fall foliage trips, too, if you want to make last-minute arrangements for that. Online at butlerbus.com. That's Butler Motor Tours. Online at butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. We'll be right back. Welcome, listeners. If you're just joining us here on It's Your Turn today, and my name is Dave Malarkey, and we're pleased on this segment to be able to chat with Barbara Fleischer, who is a co-author of a book entitled The New Senior Woman, and she is also one of the individuals who maintain a blog that I think you're going to find interesting. But let's first of all say hello to our guest. Barbara, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, it's very nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I want to mention your co-author, Thelma Reese, who also, I understand, helps to maintain the blog, right?
Oh, yes. We do this together. We've written together and we do this together, yes.
You are both, in fact, retired professors. Is my information correct on that?
We are. We are from different institutions, but actually the same city.
Mm-hmm. So what was it that led you to embark on the writing of this book, The New Senior Woman?
Well, Thelma and I, as you said, we're colleagues, and we were retired, both retired. We were a little bored, kind of at loose ends about what we were going to do with the rest of our lives, acknowledging that we are getting older. And we looked around at our contemporaries and realized that many do this aging thing very well, this retirement thing very well, but many don't. And we thought, well, let's find out what's going on with us seniors. And we realized that our senior years are very different from our mothers. Our expectations are different. We're healthier. We're more involved in the world. We're living longer. We're living better. But we don't have guideposts for this time in our lives. Somehow when our mothers and grandmothers and aunts were at this point in their lives, they were kind of ready to sit on their rocking chairs and kind of let life happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't willing to do that. We still feel we've got lots of energy and lots to give, and we're not ready to retire from life.
and we wondered who could be our role models. So we decided to meet with lots of people, lots of women our age, and, actually from all, you know, ages between 60 and 100, older than we are, some younger than we are. And we interviewed over 200 women in all walks of life, all educational levels, all races across the country, and found out what was on their minds, their stories in their words. And so we had three goals in writing the book. We wanted to find role models for us and our contemporaries, since we couldn't quite find them in our parents and our mothers. We wanted to be role models for our daughters and granddaughters. And we wanted to help change the way our culture looks at older women, because we didn't like what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what impelled us to write the book.
And thus we have the title, The New Senior Woman, and there's a subtitle, too, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife. And there's one thing, Barbara, even though you interviewed a cross-section of women, as you said, different ages, different races, different backgrounds, one thing that most all senior women have in common these days is that they're living longer, thanks to medical advances and other factors. And you say about one out of every four 65-year-olds today will live past 90. That's a pretty astonishing figure when you think about it.
It is amazing to think of that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are they living longer, but they really are living better, also due to the miracles of medical science.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just the length of life, it's the quality of life. I think that we found that most women agreed that if the quality of their lives was not good, they really didn't want to live just for the sake of living. They wanted to have a good quality of life. And yes, when we get to that point, we have almost a fourth of our lives or a third of our lives left to live.
And so how does one fill one's days in a valuable manner, given the fact that most are looking at many, many years and hopefully many healthy years? I know a lot of people, they struggle with that, Barbara, newly retired. Suddenly they have new freedom, they have new independence. And sadly, some people's health even deteriorates because they don't know how to deal with that. They haven't planned for how to deal with that.
Well, that's true. You do have to prepare. And certainly among the younger women that we have spoken to, and interestingly, we found that our book has appealed to women who are on the cusp, maybe in their late 50s, early 60s, just 60s,
mm-hmm.
who know that retirement is around the corner. And they are very concerned about how they can prepare for this. Because, you know, we prepared to be adults, but how many adults prepare to be retired? We prepare for this financially. Lots of books about that. Lots of people are approaching us with plans for financial retirement. But there's not much going on about emotional health in retirement,
mm-hmm.
emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is what our book is about. We're not concerned with finances. And, well, we looked at the women who, because they were examples for us. That's what we were looking for. And the women who seemed to be doing this best found that they looked at this time as a fork in the road, not as the end of the line. And this mental attitude seemed to make such a difference. And they asked what they could do that has purpose and meaning. And when they did that, they often found it. Some of them engaged in new careers or hobbies that they hadn't had time to develop when they were younger. They are very proactive about volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
Many were just not interested in stuffing envelopes or that kind of thing, just to keep busy. They wanted to know what it was they could do, how they could take their skills and continue to use them, the ones that, you know, wanted to do that, and actually do something that was important to people. And they found them. There are lots of ways to use what you have if you're willing to do this as a volunteer. And especially because so many agencies are underfunded, they're delighted to have volunteers come and do work for them.
I'm looking at the, I have a review copy of your book, and I'm looking at the contents. You have interesting topics that you discuss in your various chapters, Barbara Fleischer, one of which is the children are adults now. How do we keep a sense of family over generations? Because that's a big change. All of a sudden, not only are the kids adults, in many cases in today's society, they may live halfway across the country.
Exactly. They move across the world.
Yeah.
And that's just a different way. Well, one thing that we found that the people that were remaining as a family, you know, a lot of adults, older adults particularly, but I guess adults in general, are so fearful of new technology that they avoid it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
The people, the women who embraced the new technology and learned how to use their computers and Skype and use Facebook and whatever else, all of these new technologies that their children were using, were able to keep in touch very, very closely. They were able to keep in touch with their children, with their grandchildren. If they expect to do all this the way we did it when we were adults and our parents, we were adults in our own, became adults,
mm-hmm,
in our own families, and maintaining relationships with our parents, it's not going to happen that way. You don't go to dinner every Friday night or Sunday afternoon. You don't write letters. You don't keep in touch with long phone calls. The way to keep in touch, in addition to phoning and visiting, is through Skype and FaceTime and other things like that. And the people who refuse to do this, say, "Oh, I don't do computers. I don't know," are the ones who are farther and farther distant from their children and their grandchildren.
We're talking, listeners, with Barbara Fleischer. She's one of the co-authors of a book entitled "The New Senior Woman: Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife." We need to take a break. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Barbara. We'll pick up our conversation with her here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Attorney General number PA4619.
The following takes place at 2:33 a.m. in the offices of Schneider's 1 Hour.
We're getting a lot of calls tonight, Mr. Schneider.
Sure are, Mike. Schneider's 1 Hour, this is Gary.
Absolutely, Mrs. Davis. We'll be there in 15 minutes. Steve, Mrs. Davis' furnace is out on West Jefferson.
On my way.
Just sit tight, Mr. Miller. We'll see you in a minute. Ashley, the Miller's on Liberty Street.
Got it.
Remember, let them lead you to the problem,
so you can get them comfort in no time.
This is what it's all about, right, Mr. Schneider?
Being available for people 24/7.
Days, nights, and weekends.
And always arriving on time.
Or you don't pay a dime.
That's the Schneider's 1 Hour code.
Always here to help.
When you need it.
Not just when we feel like it.
All right, Schneider's 1 Hour.
To the rescue.
283-8525.
Schneider's 1 Hour. On time, day or night.
283-8525.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visiting with us by telephone is Barbara Fleischer. She is a retired professor, retired educator, and she's the co-author of The New Senior Woman, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife. You have a number of other topics you discuss, some covering emotional issues. For example, you have a chapter on separation and loss. There are facts of life. It's going to happen. You talk about how women can deal with that.
Well, that's always painful. Separation and loss does not only mean death. When we talk about separation and loss, I also mean separation from your job. You no longer are who you were. I was a teacher. I was this. I was a union organizer. I was a mother. I was a stay-at-home mom. But now you're not anymore. And so there's the loss of that identity. It's the loss of your children who move half across the country or the world, as we were talking about before. That's a big loss. There are many other kinds of loss. And then, of course, there is death. And these are things that you have to work through, and you have to look forward and not always look back. And some people are able to do this well, and some people are not. I mean, there is a grieving time for any loss that you have for a while, but you need to take steps. You need to be proactive. This is what, in almost all of the issues that face people as they get older, embracing new ideas, embracing new things, the willingness to do that, and not to be always looking back thinking how wonderful things used to be. It's a state of mind. And when we're talking about preparing for retirement, when we were talking about the adults, how to remain close to your family when you are at this period in your lives, well, that there too, embracing new things is so important, so that you can be in tune with your kids and your grandchildren.
You also have a chapter, a very practical item, on downsizing. You know, we love our possessions, but it reaches a point where they're starting to own us instead of us owning them. So you have included a chapter on that, downsizing.
That, by the way, was as we went around talking, to people about our book, in every presentation that we made, that always came up. It was one of the biggest issues for both men and women, interestingly enough. The idea that they really need to, and this is again separation and loss, they need to separate themselves from all of these items that were big memories in their lives. That's very difficult to do. You really have to establish priorities, and you have to see what it is that was most important to you. It's really a reflection on your life and what is meaningful. That's why downsizing is so painful, so difficult for many people, and some simply refuse to face it, refuse to do it, because they realize that what they're doing is making statements about their entire lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's tough in a way, though. It's comforting when you read, and the way that your book is structured, Barbara, you interviewed hundreds of women in their 60s and older who've already dealt with this. So to know that other people are dealing with it and they've dealt with it successfully, and finding out how they dealt with it, that can be comforting.
Yes, I hope so. We certainly do hope so.
There are other subjects that are covered, many other subjects that are covered in the book, listeners. The title is The New Senior Woman. I want to ask a little bit about Barbara's blog that she maintains with Thelma Reese. And many senior women will, in fact, be very familiar with the internet usage and blogging. You have... Your blog is intriguing from the get-go, from the minute you see the title, Barbara. The blog is called Elder Chicks.
Right. Well, that was interesting. Some people thought, that's kind of a not such a nice title, Chicks. However, we didn't think of it that way. We thought of Chicks as renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think of this time in our lives as a renewal. Springtime, renewal, Chicks, you know, and it is. It is for many people. And for the people who look on at this time as renewal, they're the ones that seem to be happiest. Not that they don't have things to worry about. There's not one woman that we interviewed that could say that life is easy street and I have no worries. You have to know that we did not interview Jane Fonda. Not that her life is so easy, but we weren't interested in those kind of women. We were interested in ordinary women who we found to be extraordinary people. And the fact that they looked at this time in their lives as renewal, they sort of picked up on this, on the idea of elder chicks. When we our blog, of course, has grown. We have so many viewers now from all over the world. This is something that appeals to them, this idea that we are at a new stage in our lives when we can reinvent, not so much ourselves, but reinvent society's, the culture's thoughts about this time mm-hmm. in life.
Mm-hmm. And the blog is accessible by all, just elderchicks.com, simple as that?
That's right, www.elderchicks.com, and there you are. And you can, of course, write to us, and people comment. Every month we send out a prompt, something that we're thinking about, and we always say, let us hear from you about this topic or any other topic that you want to write about. You know, it's not confined to that. But, of course, these are the people that either subscribe or that are in our contact list. You do not have to subscribe in order to comment or access the blog. It's just that if you do subscribe, then you're on our list and we send you the prompts. But we find that many people don't wait for that. They just tune in to see what, I don't mean tune in, log in just to see what we're about at this time in the month.
Our time begins to run out to chat with Barbara. I wanted to just get your comments on one more thing, though, and it's something you mentioned toward the end of your book, The New Senior Woman. It's the feeling that some women, and I dare say men too, would have following, when they get into beyond the midlife in their senior years. They feel safe in you refer to it as a senior bubble. It's comfortable, it's safe, and it's sometimes difficult to break out of that, even though they might want to. And you talk about that.
Yes. Most people of any age are most comfortable with their own kind. Mm-hmm. People like them, their own ages, and so on. Well, of course, that can be pretty stifling. However, it's particularly stifling if you are an older person, getting older, losing friends by illness, incapacitation, or death, and you find yourself becoming more and more isolated from the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that isolation increases with every passing year until you may be very much alone. I think nothing is worse for particularly, well, for a lot of people, but particularly older people, than being isolated. Because it's not just that you're sitting alone or being alone, but you are cut off from what's happening in the world. And this is what happens when you remain in a senior bubble. Certainly, the women that we found that were the most exciting to be with and interesting and seemed to be leading happiest lives were the ones who were somehow involved with people other than their own age or their own of their own interests, you know, that simply agreed with them on everything. Because that's what we do. It's comfortable to be with people that agree with us on everything. It's much more stimulating to be challenged by people of different generations, of different walks of life. And you do have to work at it. You do have to work at seeking out those experiences which will help you become involved with people other than people just like you.
I love the term that you've come up with, it, senior bubble. That's very apropos. Listeners, our time has expired. It's a fascinating subject, and not just for people who are already retired or beyond midlife years, but as Barbara mentioned a few minutes ago, for people who are approaching that. And baby boomers, these figures are eye-opening boomers. If you're a boomer, every day in the United States, 8,000 baby boomers hit 65. That's an eye-opener. And a woman who turns 65 today can expect to live to at least 85, and as we mentioned earlier, maybe even 90 or beyond. The new senior woman. I like it, and I like elder chicks. I like the title for your blog because women, they're facing these new situations, and they want to do it with class. They want to do it with dignity. They want to do it with smarts, maybe even with a little bit of sass, Barbara Fleischer. What do you say?
I hope so. That's why we're elder chicks.
That's the blog. If you want to check it out, you can do that anytime you're online, elderchicks.com, or the book, The New Senior Woman, Reinventing the Years Beyond Midlife. Thanks, Barbara Fleischer. So nice to talk with you today.
Thank you. I've enjoyed this so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, sure. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for today. The pick 2 is 4848. The pick 3, 247, 247. The pick 4, 5657. The pick 5, 64886. The wild ball for each of those is 0. Then the treasure hunt, 1, 17, 18, 22, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Safe Hunting PA in a minute. Brought to you by Ram.
This year, the perfect hunting trip starts with the perfect hunting truck, the 2017 Ram 1500. This adventure-ready pickup packs an available 395-horsepower Hemi V8 that delivers an impressive 410 pound-feet of torque. Plus, the 2017 Ram 1500 offers an available 8.4-inch touchscreen that'll connect, entertain, and guide you to the most remote hunting spots known to man or beast. Go to ramtrucks.com and see your Ram dealer today. Ram and Hemi are registered trademarks of FCA US LLC.
The fall means archery hunting season, and the Pennsylvania Game Commission urges hunters to consider these safety tips. Inspect your bow and arrows for damage prior to use. Carry broadhead tipped arrows in a protective quiver and never walk with a knocked arrow or bolt. Keep crossbows pointed in a safe direction and keep your thumb and fingers away from the string. Properly identify your target. Always make sure someone knows where you are hunting and when you expect to return. For more information, log on to PennsWilds.com.
We thank our guests today. Earlier on the program, Dr. Dennis Damon with us from Suburban Animal Clinic, a very informative program for pet owners and pet lovers. And, of course, Barbara Fleischer with whom we just chatted about the new senior woman. Interesting, huh? Yeah. Hey, I want to remind you that coming up this Monday, yes, it's this coming Monday, it's book talk time already. Well, I guess so. I mean, next week's the last week of September. We have the first day of autumn this Friday. Monday is book talk day. Our guests will be from the Prospect Library, and they have selected, I want to tell you, this looks like a terrific book. I just got my copy. I haven't started to read it yet, but I will later on today and be ready to talk about it on Monday. It's the story of the Osage murders and the birth of the FBI. I'm not familiar with
either the Osage murders, it's in Oklahoma, I guess, from the map in the beginning of the book, and the beginning of the FBI. Sounds like a great story, huh? Yeah. David Graham is the author. I'll let you know. I'll get started on it tonight, and we'll be talking about it with guests from Prospect on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Of course, we have much more to come before then. I just wanted to give you a heads up in case you wanted to glance at the book, pick it up at your library or bookstore. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will be chatting tomorrow with... we're going to be talking tomorrow about making sure that you do the right thing and not the wrong thing when you're stopped by the police. Yeah. Dr. Jeffrey Varner will be one of our guests on tomorrow's program. We'll have some other stuff for you as well. Pirate baseball tonight here on WISR. Airtime 6:40 for warm-up. The Pirates and the Milwaukee Brewers from PNC Park. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I'm Dave Mularkey. We'll see you tomorrow here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680 in Butler.
This is your Pittsburgh Pirates station.